with the possibility of another potentially hot summer looming in the Caucasus, we are pleased to be able to host a presentation by Dr. Hans Goodbrod, Regional Director of the Caucasus Research Resource Center, a program of the Eurasia Foundation, supported by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. The data that he'll be discussing today was gathered at the end of last month and builds on information that has been gathered by the CRRC in through numerous nationwide surveys over the past 15 months. And he's going to look at a number of very, very interesting questions in the context of the Caucasus, in the context of what's happened since last August with the war, with the recovery from that war, and with the ongoing protests in Georgia these past couple of months. Looking at the attitude of Georgians towards these protests, whether the protests have strengthened support for the government, as some analysts have claimed, how did the Georgian people look upon solutions to the issue, and in general, what the situation, economic and political situation, looks like in Georgia since the war and with the crash of the with the global economic crisis that has affected most every place in, throughout the world, including Georgia. Dr. Goodbrod holds a PhD in international relations from the London School of Economics and has been working in the Caucasus since 1999. His presentation will be commented by our own David Kakabadze in Prague, who is the director of our Georgian service and has been doing, he and his staff have been doing tremendous work, especially since the launch of the World War itself, and continues to enjoy the trust and faith. The broadcasts continue to enjoy the trust and faith of many, many Georgians. Therefore, we're very, very glad that David was able to join us this morning to be able to help us interpret and understand better the data that Dr. Goodbrod will be presenting to us. Thank you very much, and we look forward to hearing what you can tell us about the situation in Georgia right now. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much for the introduction. The context of what I'm going to present today is, do we have it? Right, it's going to be there? Great. Thank you. Is really from a series of surveys where they're underlined, they're caucuses-wide, so that we've done comparative surveys in the three countries. I should say all of them are nationally representative, give you a lot more detail in case you're curious about the methodology, etc. And then especially in Georgia, in the light of the sort of tumultuous events we've seen there since October 2007, we've done a range of surveys in December, April, again in April, then post-parliamentary elections, we did a survey. July, August, you can't really do surveys in the Caucasus. It's too hot and too much internal migration of people on holiday, etc. So we started again post-conflict October 2008, looking specifically at the attitudes people had to what had been going on in August. Then November and December, we did surveys again. And then we were trying to look for a good moment to try and see to measure what really was going on. And did a survey on protest and politics from May 2009. Plus, we've done a lot of focus groups both in Georgia and in neighboring countries. Now, I'll give you an overview of some of the key things that we've done. Of course, as you can imagine, I mean, each of these surveys has easily 60 to 80 questions. Some of them have, this one had about 200 questions. So there's a lot of material. If you have any more detailed questions, there's a good chance that we can actually answer that question. But what I wanted to do today is, as I said, give an overview first over where is the Caucasus situated right now, and specifically Georgia, sort of zooming out a little bit. That's maybe of interest, especially for those people who haven't been following recent events very closely or recent indicators very closely. Look at the specific protest situation right now with selected slides that are representative of our broader findings, how people want to move beyond the current impasse that we still have. Then look a little bit at the Russia situation. That's a slightly different topic, but of interest to a lot of people. And then end with really sort of looking forward to where we see some of the challenges and issues that are going to be relevant in the coming months. just as an illustration of what's important to us as we do this work, we do combine this sort of purely quantitative work with a lot of qualitative work. This is an image of a focus group taken in Marneuli. That's very important to really be able to understand how survey questions work, what resonates, what doesn't resonate, what the issues are. So it's a combination of both, and our surveys are enriched by that understanding. We do go countrywide. That's actually an image of maps we've done where we mapped every single precinct, but it's important to us not just to have an elite understanding, but to have an understanding of what happens throughout the country with a lot of attention to detail. We do train our interviewers closely to make sure they get beyond non-response and create a situation where people respond openly. And here, this is a map drawn by our interviewers in order to update a cluster with comprehensive information, because most surveys get done from the 2002 census, specifically in Georgia. And anyone familiar with Georgia knows that there's been a lot of external migration and internal migration, and a lot of real estate development, so that there are entire parts of Tbilisi that you wouldn't even capture if you just start with the 2002 census. So we spent, for example, in 2008, we went to 40,000 households just to be able to draw an accurate sample for our survey, which then had about 3,000. That was the caucus barometer. This one that I'm showing you now had a little more than 1,800 respondents countrywide. Okay, now let's look at the general situation. And this is not going to be unfamiliar to you, but it's just important to bear in mind that the Caucasus still, in spite of all the developments in Azerbaijan, is characterized by extensive poverty. This is a self-description. We also have objective indicators, including indicators where we ask, you know, do you have enough money for food and enough money for clothes and even for white goods? So, but this gives you a good sense that we're talking here relative to most of the households around you. Would you describe the current economic condition of your household as? Just not a lot of people at all describe it as good. A fair amount describe it as fair in comparison to others, so that's already a relatively low standard. But here, poverty is still a theme in all the three countries, and really something that still unites them in their transition experience. But once we take away from some of the raw indicators, where we also know things are pulling in different directions because of Azerbaijani oil, etc., we see fascinating differences between the countries. When we ask the question, these days, our country's culture is increasingly threatened by Western cultural influences. Strongly agree over there, somewhat agree, neutral, somewhat disagree, fully disagree. So those are those that will more endorse Western values coming in. And here, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, you see that really there are huge differences between the ways that Armenia and Azerbaijan look at outside influence and Georgia, which is much, much more receptive to this idea of Western influence and a sort of European discourse that's going on. We also see huge differences. This is in some ways, it is crime in its own way, but it's about corruption. We ask, have you or any member of your household been in a situation during the last 12 months when you or they had to pay a bribe in order to get a service or to obtain preferential treatment or consideration? This is now 2007 data, but it stayed stable. Yeah, there's not a lot of change there in what we see. 8% in Armenia say they had to pay, 20% in Azerbaijan, 1% in Georgia. Now, we know this data is only ever a floor of the real payments. Some people will not admit that they paid. Some people will not see what is often seen as corruption as actual corruption, like, say, paying additionally for service. But we do see very, very stark differences between the countries. And if you talk about 20% corruption, bear in mind that not everybody, not every household has actually had contact with institutions which could actually demand money. So this describes something that's pretty pervasive. This is described something that's really on a street level, seems to have evaporated. I can say a little more about that. We've done additional work on corruption as well, in case anybody's interested. And if that describes already a very different relationship that the state has to the citizens in the three countries, this here also shows us differences, although this is the type of slide that requires a lot of context in order to understand what we're really talking about. Here we talked about respondents' rating of the last election. We deliberately kept that more general because there were different elections in all the three countries in the last year. This is November 2008 data. completely fairly. Armenia and Georgia, not a lot of people describe the elections as completely fairly, but it's not as polarized as maybe some people, some very harsh critics of the current governments would see, because a lot of people describe it as to some extent fairly. Not at all fairly is this group over here, sort of balanced itself out in Georgia. I mean, if one wanted to summarize it a little bit, I mean, Armenia and Georgia, some difficulties with running elections that are seen as entirely free and fair. In Azerbaijan, potentially some difficulties in understanding that what free and fair means in that context. Although note, if you ask a question like that in Russia, a lot of people will say also the elections were fair. If you ask them were they competitive, people will say no. So this is not a blanket endorsement of what's going on, but we do see spaces that are contested in very different ways in the three countries, and a democratization that many people would describe as incomplete in the country. We ask this question very regularly, is Georgia a democracy? Democracy now, so important. Here, 33% tell us, yes, it is a democracy now. 50% say it's not a democracy. But once you start breaking that up, it's actually encouraging that we see a lot of people that say Georgia is not a democracy now. There's overwhelming agreement. It is on the way to becoming a democracy. And then people disagree with how far along it is and how big the challenges are it has in that context. Let's unpack that a little further, and because that gets now at some of the issues that you're particularly interested in with regards to the protest. When you then disaggregate that a little further and say, are people like yourself being treated fairly by the government? That's data I'll get back to much later. We actually have many more people saying, well, yes, yeah, sort of. We are being treated fairly by the government. That's not so bad in terms of a government that's responsive, although there are a lot of people still in this bracket here that disagree or completely disagree. And this is a number that you'll see over and over again, between 15 and 20% of people that feel fundamentally disaffected and feel that the government is not treating them at all fairly and is not really taking their concerns into account. Here, just for reference, I hadn't explained that before. This, of course, is the people that say they don't know, or here people that refuse to answer. We can typically add some of those assume that they're a little more skeptical, some of those people that don't mention things openly. I can tell you a couple of things about response patterns in case you're interested later. And then here, fairness is one thing. Openness of discussion is, again, something else. I mean, you can have something, a system that's not fair at all, but that at least still allows for an open discussion of what's going on. And so this is also an important way of disaggregating a little more what type of system we're in. And here we asked, in Georgia today, people like yourself have the right to openly say what they think. And here we actually see that's in some ways fairly encouraging. Once you add that together, that's really a sizable number that think that, yes, you can actually say things openly. And again, even if we saw before it was 18%, the people that completely disagree on this one are a lot less. So while people may be disaffected, they still grant that there is a lot of space, or more people are willing to grant that there's space to discuss and space to criticize and voice one's opinion. Some of these people that we saw, those that say the government's not at all treating fairly, those that say there's no chance to really have an open discussion, those are some of the people that are out protesting. That doesn't mean that those are the only ones that are unhappy. We'll get back to that. I think we see much broader demand for change, but as I said, well, I'll show you some of that. But let's look right now at the specific protest situation. I won't describe it in detail. I assume everyone's familiar with that. April 9th, protests begin, cells are being built up. Presence in the center of the city. Just a couple of things to highlight here. What measures were considered justified on the part of the government? This is now very recent data as the last three slides, data that we collected about 2 weeks ago. And here we have an overwhelming endorsement, if you sort of justified versus not justified, it's a little more restrained in the description, but endorsement of calling for dialogue. Here, this is a specific story with journalists that were, one journalist that was attacked and the people later released. I'm not going to go into the details here. But we already see more split view of whether it was justified for the government to allow the central streets to be blocked. 35% think it's justified. Actually, a lot of people think it's not justified. We know that that splits, and this is a standard concern that you may have, that splits, that in the capital a lot more people think that blocking, sort of allowing opposition protests is justified because that's really the hub of opposition to the government. Government closing the parliament building. That was sort of a lot less people. We're no longer talking about a split that already has a majority against it. Government allowing the picketing of highways, that was just a very brief incident. That's really not popular at all. But very important here, conversely, the government's sort of sullen reaction, okay, you block the streets, we stop the cleaning, that is not endorsed at all either. So the assumption is you have to actually refrain from a partisan collision and stand above it and continue to deliver services. That's something that we take very clearly out of, that I interpret out of that, although that only seems to be one small thing here, one small item. I think it tells us something more broadly about what popular expectations are. Now here, with regards to the opposition, what is seen as justified? Peaceful marches, sort of again, dialogue, important peaceful marches. I think that's also sort of an encouraging thing to see that even though a lot of people may not agree with a lot of other measures, they still think, yes, okay, you know, these protests are fine. But then when you look at these particular items in terms of particular measures, picketing of the presidential administration, I said before 20% might be sort of more, have stronger opinions on that, on particular issues against the government. Creating corridors of shame, opposition putting up cells, opposition blocking streets. And here, then, this one incident where they tried to, where Utsunobi, the one opposition figure, tried to get into a police station, that really has very little support at all. Note that, of course, some people that maybe may have these views may actually be a little concerned, and that some of them might be hiding in here, in the don't knows or refuse to answer. But I think we see a fair amount of people that are cautious about change at any cost and about sort of a radical approach to the protests right now. Then we asked this whole battery of questions. I'm just going to show you one slide about how have the protests affected your views, but also what's your view of how they've affected generally the situation. Do you think the current protests have benefited or harmed the following? Green, and that's always a sort of scheme we have here generally on this side, the positive ratings, here the sort of more negative ratings, also in the more negative colors. So benefited a lot, benefited somewhat, only 14%, and some of those will presumably be the supporters itself, think it's actually benefited the protest leaders. A lot of people think it's harmed that as well. Georgian democracy, also not having seen as benefited, damage, particularly to Georgia's economy, 60% think it's been somewhat harmed a lot. Citizens of Georgia also 60% think it's been harmed. Note that a lot of people think that the president of Georgia has also been harmed by that. That's not so much reflected in the ratings, so people attribute some sort of harm to that, but the ratings stayed actually pretty stable from what we saw. Not a lot of change there in what we could detect. So if it's sort of a tricky situation right now that the country is in, a lot of people want to move beyond that. You know, how do people see us getting beyond the country getting beyond that situation? This is an experimental question where we said, okay, you know, let's imagine you have 100% responsibility for ending these protests. How are you going to allocate that across different groups? And when we looked at other sort of questions, it turned out that this became a pretty good way of summarizing attitudes that we saw there. In spite of a lot of people not really approving of some of the opposition actions, still, the respondents put overwhelming responsibility to the government in moving beyond the current impasse. Protesters are, I guess, seen as having painted themselves into a corner, but I think the electorate sort of expects the government to help paint the opposition out of that corner again in this particular situation. Interesting, of course, as well, really remarkable that Church here takes the position that in many other settings is maybe sort of attributed to a civil society. Now, that leaves the government with a conundrum because they themselves cannot, of course, just decide that everything is going to be over. So what are the issues that people care about where people think one really should move forward? judicial independence turns up as an issue that should be discussed between the government and protesters, that means an issue that right now is sort of amenable to positive change. Yeah, we later will look at national priorities. These tend to be remarkably stable over time. Judicial independence important. Legislative reform to guarantee free and fair elections. Media freedom, interestingly, return of Media TV to Petr Khatsishvili's family turns up. Also important, you may neglect that if you just look at it as ranked, low, direct election of mayors. The reason why that's important is because a lot of these people, of course, are people that are not directly affected by that. It's a countrywide survey, so this, if you're in rural areas of Racha, this is not something that matters to you. But so this seems to resonate. And what's important about this, and we ask that in a different way, the idea of new elections, especially elections within 2009, either straight away or in the fall, doesn't resonate so strongly. We had more than 50% saying, no, actually, elections should take place as scheduled, which means in some cases several years ahead. And the way that I interpret that, and again, I mean, you know, it's just a sort of suggestion. We hope you take your own interpretations from that. We don't want to push any. It's important for us to make the people speak through that. But the way that I interpret that is that if you've just gone through two elections, and if you've rated the elections in the way that we've seen that before, that many people say is, well, more or less fairly, that people understand elections are not an end in themselves, they're a means to an end, and in order to make sure that they can actually deliver what people want, reforms actually need to be in place. In particular, of course, in that regard, you have to have sort out questions of electoral code and media, access to media, in order to move forward with that. I think that's a fairly remarkable finding in terms of what we've seen. It speaks to the level of exhaustion with a polemically charged politics. What I think people want to see is a lot of governance. Now let me switch topics here, because I promised to say a couple of things about Russia, and then I'll get back to some of those issues that are going to be relevant in how we're going to look at things in the future. This is a sort of an interesting slide. We could spend a lot of time on that. This was taken in April 2008, and we experimented a little bit with various questions in the three countries. This is one way we do the classical questions, you know, do you approve of doing business with? Do you approve of being friends with? And do you approve of marrying? And then at some point we decided, okay, we need to specify that a little more so that people have a clear notion about what we mean. It was an attitude towards Georgian women marrying other nationalities, where you don't necessarily have an assumption that someone's integrated into your own society. Now, note that here there are a couple of people, minorities, that we talked about as well. And I'll just highlight some key findings for you. What's remarkable about this is, more broadly, that marrying Abkhaz, if you just compare here laterally, the blue values, yeah, you're actually the highest is Russians, in terms of what gets approved. This is April 2008 data. So the highest level of approval is marrying Russians, for Georgian women to marry Russians. Greeks is also at 42. And then I really think that's remarkable, and it's worth pointing out that Abkhaz and Ossetians in April 2008 were still ahead of, first, some of the immediate neighbors, but also, say, for example, Western partners, American citizens. So we're really talking about a culture that, I mean, for all the discussions and sometimes sort of back and forth on tolerance, when we actually talk about, you know, relationship to other groups, we really see a lot of openness here to the direct neighbors. And we see that, as always has been said, but I think it's a powerful way of illustrating, that the political sentiments are not charged with, the political situation is not charged with personal sentiments. We've looked at how some of that stuff has changed. We'll just show you a couple of snapshots. This is now November data. Which countries do you see as friendly, neutral, or unfriendly towards Georgia? And there, of course, we see something very radically different. Unfriendly Russia. There's almost nobody here who says that Russia is friendly. Interestingly, sort of US, EU, we see some sizable difference there. We can say a little bit about how that looks in the neighboring countries in case you're interested. But what's remarkable, I think, again, and the reason why we think, I mean, in many ways, Georgia has retained the openness that has been one of its hallmarks and one of the things itself it prided itself on, but I think rightly so, is when you then ask a question, limiting trade with Russia is, compare that to the neighboring countries. Here, very good, somewhat bad, very bad, no difference. So we actually have a country that's just sort of come out of a conflict. That's November data. That's just come out of a conflict. And where not only do they tell us this, they also tell us in roughly similar distributions, well, sure, if you know Russian investments in Georgia or Russian companies owning Georgian companies should still be allowed. So the country has really remained open to having that interchange, and that openness is really still open to Russia and to engagement with Russia, not on the political level, but on the personal and economic level as well. The impact on the internal discussion, and this is, I think, something that's been neglected a little bit by the government, the impact on the political situation in Georgia is seen, though, sort of, it's a little more complex. When we ask here, do you think the Georgian government generally talks too much, the right amount, or too little about Russian activity in Georgia? Data from May, 29% think it talks the right amount, but actually we have about two-thirds here saying this, it's become too prominent in internal discourse. And I think, again, that reflects that what the electorate wants is sort of a space of deliberation rather than something that goes from crisis to crisis with some attribution to what's happening externally. Let me move here lastly through some of the things to watch for. And again, I mean, I'm really can entertain all your questions on details and have a lot more to say in case you're curious. A couple of things to watch for. This is a complex slide, but the how would you evaluate coverage of the following channels? This is with regards to protests right now. If it's green, it favors the protesters. We only see this here, down there with Kafkazia and Maestro, that have only a reach in the capital, which is why most people say don't know. If it's yellow, it's balanced. And if it's red, then the view here on this side is that it actually favors the government. So media is an issue, and access to media is an issue that remains relevant. These are some of the national priorities that have been outlined. That's not a lot of surprise to anyone who's watched data from the caucuses. Jobs and territorial integrity always vie for the first place. Interestingly, there are several issues that are actually amenable to a sort of quality-focused discussion on public policy by the opposition in case it wants to engage on that. If people here say no, that's in some ways not entirely representative. These were just now the things that were mentioned as being of particular importance, and we can look at that slide again later in case anyone's interested. What are the immediate medium-term things? And medium-term here, I mean for the next 6 months. We've seen that short-term, there's a will to really move beyond the impasse. What are some of the medium-term concerns? Not a lot of that's going to be a surprise to you, but it's still going to be. This is a way of putting a figure to that. We asked a battery of questions, and I'm just selecting here somewhere. Does the following describe your situation? I was made redundant from my job since September 2008. 5% tell us that describes what happened to them, or somewhat describes what happened to them. That doesn't look so bad. But what you have to remember is that only about 35 or 37% are actually working. The other are unemployed, or sort of housewives, students, pensioners. That means up to 1 in 7 workers may have lost their job in the last 9 months. This is rough data. Yeah, I mean, you have to be a bit careful. Here's there's a margin of error in there, and you need to look at this more closely. This instrument wasn't geared to measure that, but we're talking about a really tremendous impact. And here, when we ask the other question, how has that impacted you? I had to reduce my daily spending on basic expenditures. 43% of Georgians tell us that describes their situation since September 2008. Another 23, so we're talking really about a full two-thirds here who've been hit by the events since. Where do we move from here? Is there a silver lining there? Just last slide. I showed you in the beginning the question, is government treating people like you fairly? And then a standard question that I now didn't show was, what direction is politics going into? Is it going into a right direction? Is it not changing at all? Or is it going in a wrong direction? But this slide shows in a really compelling and stark way, more than you often need in social science or in typical research findings, that if people think that the government treats them fairly, you're fair versus not fair, they're much more likely to think that politics is going in the right direction. Yeah, right. Here you see this curve. here in Azerbaijan also, I mean, stunning differences. Again, Georgia, in some ways, even more stark, how that moves. So the lesson that we take out of that is, okay, some of the age of being able to satisfy demands by economic growth, that may be over for the immediate future because of the economic crisis. But where there's still a lot of potential is in governments reaching out, in particular now Georgia, since that's the focus, but reaching out and making sure that people have the sense that the government is there for the people and responding to their particular needs and is actually listening. And if you do that, there's a chance that people, in spite of other challenges, will say that politics is going in the right direction. In summary, much more detail available. And as an underlying theme, advertised data, we think to a certain extent a lot of the challenges that we're seeing now are due to the fact that people have not been using data and have not really been using polling in understanding what the electorate wants. There's a genre of talking about the caucuses as a really wild, exciting, and in a way mythical place that has its that's an interesting genre and an enriching genre, but it's dangerous because it also limits the way we really understand the political and social processes. And what we also hope to contribute to is helping to change the way people talk about the caucuses, really taking into account what people want and what the needs of the electorate are. And that's why we're so keen and why we think it's so important to show this type of data.
Thank you, Hans. That was fascinating. I'd like to, at this point, turn over the floor to David for his comment and insight.
Well, thank you very much, Hans. It was really an extremely interesting presentation. I am not an expert in your field, so I just have quite a few questions to those which I hope to be able to ask later on. Actually, I had planned to describe very briefly the current political situation, if it's appropriate in this context. Is it okay, Martins?
Yes. So, please go right ahead.
I will be very brief. So the opposition protests are going on since April the 9th, more than 2 months now. They are slowing down, I have to say. Some of the streets in downtown Tbilisi have been unblocked recently. While there still are some streets which are blocked, and these so-called cells, the mock cells, are still installed in some parts of the Georgian capital, while some others are being transported to other big cities, Kutaisi, Zugdidi, in the western part of Georgia. What is very interesting, I think, is that opposition seems to be more and more split, probably. They are. It's obvious that the differences between the opposition leaders are becoming bigger, and I think this was one of the aims of the Georgian government and President Saakashvili personally when he decided to show restraint in reacting to the current political crisis in Georgia. So he has probably learned the lesson from November 2007 when the demonstration was dispersed by using force, and then the IMEDITV headquarters were stormed, which was, in my view, one of the biggest mistakes and wrongdoings of the current leadership. So this lesson seems to be learned. And the other thing which the Georgian leadership achieved is also the appreciation on the side of the Western partners, because everybody praises Saakashvili for showing restraint. And the most recent example was Philip Gordon, the new Assistant Secretary of State, who is visiting the region right now. He was in Yerevan 2 days ago. Yesterday he was in Georgia. Today he is in Baku. And so he was one of those officials who praised Saakashvili and his government for not using force in dispersing the crowd, which was not an easy thing to do, by the way. And as this poll, as Hans presented, as this poll shows, many of the Georgian citizens, especially citizens of the capital, are not satisfied by the fact that many streets in downtown Tbilisi were blocked, because it's really not very nice not to be able to go to work on time, or take your child to school on time, or come in the evening from work on time back home. So it was not an easy thing to do, I guess, but still, I think this was a smart decision by the government. The other thing is how long you can manage or you can tolerate the fact that people are not able to enjoy normal life, to be able to use transportation, and so on and so forth. And there was even effect of blocking an accident or incident of blocking the railway in at the main railway station in Tbilisi. So fortunately, it didn't last too long. It was just for a couple of hours. And there were also threats of blocking the main international, actually the only international airport in Tbilisi. So this didn't happen yet. In this situation, very interesting to me was to see that the rating of President Saakashvili rose by 5% according to the recent poll by Greenberg, Quinlan, Rosner Quinlan. And it shows that the rating of the president is now 43%, approval rate of the president is 43%, which was, I think, 37 or 38 just a few months ago. So, this is what we see on the ground right now in Georgia. It's very hard to predict how all this will come to an end, or whether it will come to an end. Some hope in the government that with the summer approaching, with the summer holidays approaching, this will inevitably slow down, and probably they should await another wave of huge protests in autumn, which is, as everybody knows, the best time for staging revolutions, and probably even worse. And this is the question of Russia planning or not planning another invasion in Georgia. But this is another topic, and I don't want to spend too much time on that.